Welcome to the Celeste Evolve podcast, where transformation meets inspiration. I'm your host, Tanya, inviting you on a journey of self-discovery, empowerment, and healing. In each episode, we dive deep into the realms of spirituality, energy healing, and personal growth, uncovering powerful insights and techniques to help you live a more fulfilling life. Join me as I share candid conversations with experts and everyday heroes, revealing their stories of overcoming challenges, finding purpose, and embracing authenticity. Whether you're seeking guidance, inspiration, or simply a reminder that you're not alone on your journey, this podcast is your safe space to explore, learn, and grow. So grab your headphones, open your heart, and let's embark on this transformative adventure together. Get ready to unlock the power within and create the life you've always dreamed of. In today's episode, we have Betty Guadagno sharing her inspiring story of transformation and awakening. She discusses her life before her awakening, her near-death experience, and the Kundalini awakening that followed. Betty describes her experience of purgatory and the realization that the world she lived in was an illusion. She explains the concept of choosing life experiences and the lessons of karma. Betty also touches on the challenges and lessons of raising a child with disabilities. It was a very, very inspiring conversation, to say the least. Overall, her story highlights the power of personal growth, spiritual awakening, and the importance of unconditional love. I'm so excited to have our second guest in. Without any further ado, let's dive right in. Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of Celeste Evolve, its subsidiaries, or any entities they represent. Hi, Betty. Thank you so much for joining the show, the Celeste Evolve podcast. We are so grateful to have you here. Thank you so much for joining.
Yes, I feel the excitement. I'm so grateful to connect. Looking forward to this conversation.
My first question to you, before the awakening, can you tell us what was your life like?
Oh my goodness, yes. And I'll preface it with a trigger warning, because my life before my awakening was very traumatizing, and I was a traumatizer as well. But now the beautiful thing about the awakening is that my life has transformed 180 degrees. It's nothing like what it was before. I actually just celebrated the 5-year anniversary of my awakening just 2 days ago.
Whoa.
So that was a nice, it was very nice to be able to reflect on what's changed in the last 5 years, and it's literally everything. But my life before my awakening was immersed in addiction. I had been in active addiction for 22 years. My parents were both addicts. I experienced a really traumatic loss at the age of 23. My parents both committed suicide together to end their suffering with addiction, because they didn't even know that there was just a way to stop using. They thought that they had to die in order to leave that life, that lifestyle, the poverty, the abuse, the toxic codependency. So, you know, I suffered every kind of trauma as a child as well, sexual trauma, emotional, physical trauma. Like I shared, we were very impoverished. So everything that goes along with being poor, being a thief, being a manipulator. And then we have a saying in our collective that hurt people and healed people heal people. And I was most certainly a traumatized person who traumatized other people. It wasn't just like, oh, all of these sad, terrible things happened to me. At some point in my life, I said, I'm not going to let sad things happen to me anymore. Now I'm going to be the person who makes sad things happen to other people. And so for the latter part of my life, I terrorized, abused, tormented other individuals, specifically women. And so my life was really racked in darkness and depravity.
Yeah, I've heard of the story as well. And it's, you know, the best part is the way that you're talking about it, right? You're saying that I was so and so, I did that, I did this. It takes a lot of courage to be able to say that. And that to the world, it's like this, you know, even to go to the church and confess your sins. You think, I would go, if I stay in Dubai, I would go to Jebel Ali, which is far away, to confess my sins so that I won't get to see the priest. But the way that you're saying it, that takes a lot of courage. And thank you so much for sharing it. And what led to the point where you had the near-death experience? Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, girl. I mean, like, that's all that my life was. So my near-death-like experience, my awakening, was onset by an overdose of drugs. And I've heard a lot of people say, like, oh, well, it wasn't a real experience because it was produced, or, you know, people have their comments and that's totally fine. I didn't think that it was real either. I just thought that I was so high that I was talking to God. One of the main messages in my awakening was stop using. So I was like, wow, damn, I'm so high that they're breaking up with me right now. That's crazy. And, you know, I wrote my experience off as induced psychosis. This was not part of my picture. I was a militant, staunch atheist before my experience. And then I, you know, in my spiritual experience, I was just completely overwhelmed with the fact that I was wrong. And I was actually quite mad. I'm probably the only spirit to make it to heaven and actually be pissed. I was like, what? I can't believe it. There's no way. Yeah, definitely a overdose is what led me into the space of the awakening.
And how was it like? So I saw that it was someone else had given it to you. Did they do that intentionally?
So yeah, I had a series of awakenings before my actual near-death-like experience. And I don't usually share about this part of the story, not because I'm hiding it or anything, just because it was so many months before the actual experience. But yeah, like I said, I tormented a lot of people. And there was this one man in particular that I took advantage of him. I manipulated him. I conned him. I abused him. And he wanted revenge. And so to get revenge, he dosed a drink that I was drinking. He put around 300 hits of LSD inside of a drink. And I drank about half the drink. And I didn't know that there was inside of it. But I, after that, it hit me. I just thought like, oh my God, I died and I slipped into death and now I'm stuck here. What do I do? And my life felt like purgatory. And that happened on August 8th, 2018. And my awakening didn't happen until March 23rd, 2019. But I was having little series of awakenings. Obviously, I was like overdosed with hallucinogens. Like my brain started to crack open quite a bit. Yeah. And then when my actual awakening happened, it was from an overdose that I had induced on myself. I mean, accidentally. I didn't mean to take as much that I did.
So you're saying that the first time you had the overdose, how did you know that this was purgatory? Like, what was it like? Was it like a dark room? You saw your body?
No, no. Like my actual physical living life felt like purgatory. And I had never had that awareness before because I was so sedated on. For, I'll talk about me. When I was wrapped in active addiction, it was every second of every day was just about how do I manipulate people? How do I prostitute myself? How do I abuse myself to get money, to get more so that I can repeat the cycle all over again? And your whole life is just one constant loop of insanity. And so that felt like purgatory because I was on some sort of loop and there was no light, there was nothing good. Everything was just so dense and so dark, but I never had any awareness of it before, but until that overdose of hallucinogens, when my brain really started to crack open and I thought, man, my life is really not great. My addiction kept convincing me that my life was so fun and I get to do whatever I want. And isn't it so great being totally reckless and out of my mind all the time?
And then when it comes to, so is awakening and a near-death experience two different things? Because I don't know the difference.
Yeah, I think so. Well, some people would say, but for me, I hit all of the classic markers of a near-death experience without actually dying. Nobody ever pronounced me dead. I don't feel like I actually died because I was very aware of my physical body. But I have some language for what happened to me today. What I experienced was a spontaneous kundalini awakening. And kundalini roughly translates into life force. So I had a life force energy activation, which opened up every single one of my chakra systems and put them online all at the exact same moment. These are systems that had never been awoken before, totally dormant. And then in the moment of my awakening, it was like my spirit, when my third eye and my crown chakra opened up, my spirit just shot right out of my head and was like, let me get out of this body. Let me go back to where I come from. And that's when I started to travel into the space of eternity.
Okay. And then what happened? So you had the kundalini awakening. That's like, did you even know that this was called kundalini awakening?
No, definitely not. I didn't have any language for my experience for years. I just kept affirming to people, I died. And they were like, you're not dead, you're here. And I'm like, no, I'm dead. Because I had no language for what had happened to me. And thank goodness for integration and for the universe sending me the people that I needed so that I could find the language that I, for my experience.
Can you tell me what happened? So, you know, there's the part that you were saying that you saw the matrix when you had the Kundalini awakening. So, and then there was this other person, someone else who had said that when she had the Kundalini awakening, for her, it was not a drug overdose or anything. I think she was doing some form of breathing technique. And then she felt like something go from her down the root chakra all the way to the head. And then it just went like that. Is that something like that, what you experienced?
Definitely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, there's different kinds of yoga and breathing that can activate your Kundalini energy. And the way that it's depicted is a coiled serpent at the base of your spine. So sitting in your root chakra is this coiled serpent. And as your Kundalini starts to arise, the serpent straightens up. And so it activates, it hits all of your energy centers in your human body. So that's definitely what happened to me. As soon as the energy was rushing up and down over and over and over again. And as it came to my upper chakras, it was like, I'm out of here. I don't want to be here right now. I'm out of this body. And that's when the experience really started to take place. And yeah, it's so layered. There's so much that goes into it. But I did see the matrix that we live inside of. I saw all of the green lines of code that make up this world that we live in, that we believe is our reality. And then when I traveled into the space of eternity, I saw real reality, which is just this beautiful vibration of unconditional love and joy and peace and serenity and nothing quite like here.
Really? So you saw like the whole thing crumble down, because, you know, there's that scene in Inception where it's like suddenly everything just goes upside down and then it just goes away. And then it's like this confusing sort of scene. And then I don't know about the green cord. So how did that look like?
Yeah, it's so interesting. Well, I just made a video the other day because I was talking about it was the anniversary. And so I watched some of the movies that came into my awareness in my awakening. And it almost felt like every movie or every story that you have been exposed to, like you as an individual, it has some sort of deeper meaning. It's part of your experience for a reason. So if a movie really resonates with you or you really love it, it's because there's some kind of truth for you inside of it. And the movies that came into my awareness were The Matrix, Inception, What Dreams May Come. And those movies are really about creating a reality. So I just watched Inception yesterday just to kind of like culminate, and I watched a little bit of The Matrix too. And I think really what the message of that part of my awakening was after my integration, the things that I've been able to piece together from it, is that the world that I live inside of is an illusion. This is someone's dream. The architecture of this world is a collection of dreams. So, you know, I live in the middle of New York City and I'm surrounded by buildings. All of those buildings were somebody's thought before they became a building. So the same way that inside of a video game, you might decide, oh, I'm going to build a building here. And then all of a sudden it constructs. That's kind of what it felt like in my spiritual experience. It felt like, oh, I'm seeing the code behind everyone's dreams that are constructing the reality that we live inside of, this collective dream that we live inside of.
It's like in the Bhagavad Gita also, you know, after I started getting into all of this, I started reading all of the books to find out what it is. So even in the Bhagavad Gita, have you read the book? You have? Okay.
I open up books to random pages and I look for the piece of information that source wants to send me.
A quick breather, take a moment to stretch, grab a drink, and we'll be right back. But in that also, they talk about the Maya, which is like the simulation that you're talking about. So then would we know who created the simulation?
Well, you know, that's kind of like the epic question, right? Is it God that created the simulation? Is it us? Did we create the simulation? So there's a lot of different stories that, you know, that we use all of these different archetypes in mythology. So in Christian mythology, and then even in all the mythologies, in Greek mythology, Roman mythology, Eastern philosophy, there's always some sort of trickster energy, right? So is it the trickster energy that created the illusion that we live inside of? There's a story in the Quran about Iblis not submitting. And so for me, that's a big part of something that clicks together for me. Perhaps this was those people's idea. And then we just all kind of have now we're inside of that illusion and we're doing whatever. So for me, a big part of it is maybe I've been like, I don't want to use the word trapped, but maybe I've been reincarnating over and over again because, you know, I think that I have to, or maybe it's just because it's, you know, it's like a cool roller coaster here. It's a fun game to play. And there, you know, I go back and forth a lot. And I think the more that I come into spiritual awareness and understanding, none of it actually matters. It doesn't matter like what story I choose to believe in, because again, it's just a story. I'm here playing a part in this epic play of life, and I don't have to be super attached to the structure of the script. I can just play my role and do what feels good and love my life and love my creator. And when I focus a lot on like, why do things exist? Or why is it this way? Or why is it that way? I can make myself totally sick. Really, I'm really upset.
If we keep thinking about why did this happen to me? Why did I even do this, right? Can you tell me more about the thing where you saw that you picked your life, the part, and then the beings?
Yes, I think that's one of the most impactful parts of the story. I feel like it's the part of the story that I'm really meant to share about. So while I was in the space of eternity, I was greeted by loved ones that had crossed over. My dad was there and he guided me through most of my experience. And my father had committed suicide 11 years before, yet somehow I saw him in the space of eternity. So that dismantled a whole thought system for me, because the only thing that I knew about God or religion or whatever I thought was that if you commit suicide, you definitely don't go to heaven. So, and you know, that's why I was an atheist, because I thought, well, I can't imagine my parents suffering their whole human lives and then being damned to suffer for all of eternity. That seems real messed up. And so I just decided not to believe in God because I didn't think that there was any in between. So being greeted by my father was obviously super transformational. And he's my number one spirit guide. He's always with me over my left shoulder. And so after I was greeted by him, I was taken basically in front of a table of beings. And these beings, I didn't ask who they were, because I didn't have to, because I knew, I had a deep knowing that they were people that were in charge of something. And they had this big book on this table and they were thumbing through the book. And they said, nice to see you. You're not meant to stay. You're only here for information. And I was like looking all around me. I'm like, you guys aren't talking to me, are you? Because I don't know where I am, but it feels way better than where I just was. And I'm staying. And then everything kind of started to come into my awareness. And I was downloaded with a lot of information. Like I was instantly, I had instant knowing, just like this complete download and upload into the system that is my soul. One of the things that I was downloaded with was that I had actually chosen my life before I came to Earth. And like I shared, I had gone through a lot of different sorts of tragedies in my life and a lot of perceived suffering. So to be told that I picked it, I was like, no way, I would never pick this. So then they took me through the details of it. And the way that it looked in my mind's eye was a lot like a grocery store. And lining the walls of the grocery store aisles were these big giant cereal boxes. And every cereal box had a life experience on it. And I had this big empty grocery cart and I just start grabbing every single box that I can. And then the download came in that I was picking these particular experiences and I was picking the family line that I was born into because I was coming to Earth for the Great Awakening. And I had a very divine spiritual mission to transmute negative energy. And so I was picking every life experience that many people in our collective never have an opportunity to transcend or heal. So the family line that I chose to be born into, I knew that being born into that family line, I was going to have to deal with incest and rape and molestation and poverty and addiction and alcohol addiction and everything that goes along with that. So I was already picking a whole myriad of life experience just by choosing that family to be born into. Picking my parents and then also picking all of the things that I would have to deal with in life. You know, I picked the life experience of homelessness. I picked the life experience of prostitution, dereliction, depravity. All of these things had very high probability on my life path because of the family line that I was being born into. And then there were things in the cart that I hadn't gotten to yet in my life, like recovery and overcoming and spiritual awakening. Those were all plot points as well. And every time that I picked a life experience off the shelf, a little orb of light would come out with the box. And that would be the person, the soul that I would come into contract with. And the one that sticks out very vividly to me is the man who sexually abused me when I was a small child. His orb of light came to my orb of light and we came into contract with each other. And I saw all the reasons why. One of the reasons was that I had been his abuser in a past life and we were balancing the energy in this life. And also, again, for the Great Awakening, that I was going to come and heal childhood sexual trauma for every little girl who never got an opportunity to before they left form. And for the collective itself to heal that aspect of sexual trauma. So many people experience trauma like that. And so for me, when I do my healing work around it, I'm not just doing it for me. I'm doing it for everyone in the collective. It makes me feel like I have much more of a purpose than just doing it for myself. So, you know, download of the pre-birth plan and this download of the Great Awakening, they told me that I was a spiritual soldier sent here on a divine mission to uplift the consciousness of the planet, that the collective is shifting from a level of third dimensional thinking to fifth dimensional thinking, which means that we're going from self-centered thinking to God-centered thinking, and that we're all here for this wild ride. It's the most exciting time to be on Earth, or so they keep saying. And so, yeah, like they told me to buckle up. They told me that the first part of my life was boot camp, and the second part of my life would be carrying out the mission, and I would have soulmates and kindred spirits and mentors and teachers to help me along the way, and that my life would not be nearly as challenging as it had been. And I was like, I do not trust you guys. I don't believe anything that you're saying. You didn't tell me how messed up Earth was before I went. And now I'm like stuck down there in this glitched, unhealed body. And they said, okay, well, listen, if you don't want to go back into her, you don't have to, but you are definitely going back, not as a punishment, but because you signed up for a mission and you have to complete it. So we'll show you the baby that you'll be born into if you choose not to go back into the body that you just came from. And so they showed me this beautiful little baby and everything about her, her ethnicity, where she would be born, her life challenges. She was going to take on my life experience cart, but then she was also going to have things in the cart that had to do with the family line that she was being born into. So she had even deeper levels of adversity because, you know, she had to pick a family that all of these experiences could happen in. And I was like, oh man, if my only options are going back into this glitched body that I just came from, or to start from zero, I'm just going to go back into the body that I already had because I cannot start from zero. There's no way. And then I found myself sifting back into my awareness. And again, none of this was a punishment. I want to make that really clear. This was not a punishment. They weren't like, you have to go back. We're making you go back. It was just, you signed up for something. You wanted to play a part in a play. You're in the movie already. You can't stop being in the movie. Or, you know, you started a video game. You got to see it all the way through to the end. Or you're on a roller coaster. You can't hop off the roller coaster halfway through. You got to ride it to the end. And really, in that space of eternity, it was like I woke up from a dream. It wasn't, my life on Earth wasn't even real. It was just this little blip of nothing. I could barely even remember it.
So when you said you were there with the beings, right? Like, how did they look like? Were they wearing clothes? Were they like humans? A quick breather. Take a moment to stretch, grab a drink, and we'll be right back.
There's actually no sight in the space that I was in, but it's all non-physical, but there were images coming into my mind's eye. So through my third eye, I was seeing things. And I think the best way that I can describe the beings is just as these beautiful light bodies, like these beautiful glowing bodies of light. So no facial features, no skin, but just light. And I really feel like that was their, you know, the essence of their soul.
And when you were doing your shopping at the grocery store, didn't anyone warn you and tell you, no, you can't take it because it's like too much?
That's so funny. Where was my guide to warn me? Well, that's the thing though, is that they would have told me if I couldn't do it, and they didn't, because I have the ability to transcend and overcome all of those things. You know, we have a saying that God doesn't give you more than you can handle. I totally believe that. But I don't necessarily think that it's God as much as I think that it's our higher self. Like, I do think there's some sort of levels to get up to that realization of God. So I don't think that my soul signed up for anything that it can't handle. My soul can do it all. My human perceives limits, but my soul is boundless and eternal.
So what, according to you, does karma mean?
So I think that karma is really just the balancing of energy. So like in my life today, I am balancing karma inside of this lifetime. I don't have to wait for another life to balance my karma. Maybe if I didn't have spiritual awareness, I might have left form and not known that I could have balanced it in one life. So for instance, I make living amends today. Like I said, I harmed a lot of women in my life. Women, I harmed a lot of people. I harmed many, many people. So today I make a conscious effort to be of service to other people. So every time that I help a woman, I think about a woman that I harmed in the past, and I know that I'm balancing my karma in that space.
So it's not like you have to go back to the woman that you harmed and apologize and get her forgiveness?
Well, I have done that, but that's something that took me years to get a foundation. I can't just go and be like, hey, I'm sorry. Yeah. I have to show that I am a different person today, because apologies don't mean anything. And so I have approached the women that I've harmed after being in recovery for years and with the guidance of a mentor. And I'm not just like going to go in there all nilly-willy. And I also have a very strong foundation in faith. So source comes with me. My guides come with me. I ask them to guide my words and to give me the courage to do that. It's very hard because it's like a living life review. It's very hard to face my past life inside of my own life. I'm living two lives in one lifetime. And so for me, as this new version of myself, to go back and confront the things that the old version of myself did, it takes a lot of courage. And so I have the help of a mentor. I have the help of my guides, my higher power. And then I can go in and I can make the amends. But really the most important thing is making the living amends. How do I act like a better person moving forward?
Yeah, because I was asking that because there are so many people that I would probably have to go ask forgiveness for, but then I've like already blocked them out. So there's no way. I've blocked them, changed my numbers. So I'm like, how do I go back now? Like if I go and do that, am I not bringing them back into my life and then creating more karma probably?
Yeah, you know, and I think that's a question that you got to ask, you know, your higher power. You ask your guides, you ask a mentor, you ask somebody who has more experience with something like this, because sometimes it can cause harm. So there are some people in my life that I caused harm to that if I was to reach back out to them, it would be more harmful. And so I have to make that decision with a mentor and say, should I do this? And if my mentor says no, you know, write a letter of your amends and go burn it out in a field or go bury it somewhere and be a better person moving forward. I mean, people die. You know, I owe my parents amends. You know, I was a terrible daughter. I mean, like they weren't great parents either, but like I also was not a good child. And so I can't make amends to them because they're no longer on earth. So what do? I can talk to their spirit. I can write a letter. I can be a better person moving forward. So those are all things that I think you have to really check in with other people about, because you don't want to just go around causing harm. You know, like if somebody who raped me came up to me and was like, hey girl, I'm sorry. I'd be like, yo bro, I don't want to see you. You know, like why don't you take a step back?
Yeah, that is very true. When you said you're like, you picked your parents, like does our parents pick the children too?
Yes. Yeah, it's a combined decision. Yes.
So like, you know, these days we see a lot of parents having their children with different disabilities, right? Is there, what kind of lesson are we signing up for when we do that?
Yes, I think that's such a great question. And I think that there's a lot of children right now that are being born on the spectrum with autism. And these are some of our greatest spiritual teachers. They are the third wave of volunteers that are coming in for the Great Awakening, because these children are showing us what it's like to live life without the confines of social constructs. Because they do not understand social constructs. And just with any kind of disability, really, it's really showing about unconditional love. You know, you have to be a very patient, tolerant person to deal with a child who has some sort of disability or is differently abled. So it's really, the spiritual lesson is about harnessing in more unconditional love.
That makes sense. Because I also heard that sometimes when angels want to reincarnate, then they are not, the human vessel will not be able to handle the vibration. And so they damage the vessel. So there's a friend of mine as well, who has a child who was on, you know, that kind of a spectrum. So, you know, when I heard this, I called her up and I told her, you know what? She's actually an angel. She's very strong. She did that because she came here for you, to save you. And so it's very hard for her to understand that point of view. But when I told her, then she was like, then what is the lesson that I'm supposed to do? What am I supposed to do more? How can I do better, right? Like spiritually. So do you think there's an advice that you could give?
Oof, that's so challenging. My nephew, my cousin's son, who I call my nephew, he's also on the spectrum. And, you know, it's one thing to have this spiritual information and to share it with others. Like I've shared with my cousin, oh my goodness, he's a spiritual soldier. He's here for the Great Awakening. But to live the day-to-day life with the challenges like that, they don't care. And so it doesn't really matter what kind of spiritual information we have. Like I have spiritual information that I'm actually a soul and I'm not a human, but it doesn't matter because I'm here to have a human experience. So I have to find that temperance between the two worlds. Again, I think that the lesson is really in that unconditional love. Obviously, parents have unconditional love for their children. They can get bothered by their children too, but there is that underlying love. And it's really a lesson in patience and tolerance. You know, your soul might really want to cultivate patience and tolerance, and you're definitely going to have to do that when you have a differently abled child.
When you said parents, you know, in our Christianity, we believe that suicide is the biggest crime, right? You do that, then you're damned. What do you think is happening to your parents then? Where are they now? Are they okay?
So this is not, I don't advocate for suicide because I think that, okay, so here's my, I have a couple different perceptions, but here's one of them. When you commit suicide, you hit a reset point in the game. So a timeline fractures off and you just wake up in a hospital bed and you have to continue your life and keep going however it goes. So my father communicates to me from a timeline where only my mother died. And he did not die. Like we found him in time. And he had a near-death experience from his suicide attempt. And so we communicate to each other from these fractured timelines where he has been cultivating his own spiritual growth this whole time so that I could get some of the residual in this timeline here. Now, this is like a very layered multiverse string theory sort of concept to wrap your head around. So it might not be for everybody. And I'm not advocating for suicide. I don't think that anybody is damned. I also don't think that anybody signs up to kill themselves. That's not a plotted out exit point. But I do think that people sign up for very challenging lives where it's a high probability that they could use suicide as an exit point. But there's no such thing as condemnation. There truly isn't. And that makes people so upset. I don't know why. Isn't that nice to think that that everybody that you love, you're going to see again, or that God loves everybody unconditionally? You know, God is not this condemning judge that we've made him out to be. God is nothing but grace. The only condemnation is the condemnation that we put upon ourselves.
You spoke about timelines. I know that's like a whole different topic. Maybe we'll talk about it when you come back again. And when you said, you know, you said that people have a hard time wrapping their heads around the fact that God doesn't condemn you. It's the same thing that I'm facing too. You know, when I first, so I'm a Christian family I was born in, and we don't believe in reincarnation, right? So the first time I heard about a near-death experience, I was like, what? That makes the most sense. Because to me, it didn't make sense that you would be in this place with fire and then you're going to be poked with a fork and then, you know, all of that stuff. It didn't make sense to me. But then when I talk about most of my friends here, we are very religious. So when I tell them that there's no hell and that you're going to keep coming back again, when I say keep coming back again and reincarnating, it scares them. They would rather face hell than the fact that you get more chances. Why do you think that is the case?
Wow, that's so interesting. Well, I think that is the case because the matrix that we live inside of, the game, the movie that we live inside of is doing its job. The job of the big boss. Okay, so the world that we live inside of, that's the illusion. That is the antagonist in the story of life. And its job is to scare you, is to make you fearful so that you don't continue on your path. And the Matrix loves closed-mindedness. I mean, it thrives on the opposite of spiritual principles. One of my favorite spiritual principles or virtues that I live my life by is the spiritual principle of open-mindedness. Even the conceptions that I have today, I'm open-minded to them changing because life is always changing and evolving. Mm-hmm. And maybe new information will come in and it will dismantle the old information. That's happened to me many times. So I think that also because we've been told that we have to live by this moral compass. And so there could be some resentment too. Well, I've lived my life in this really righteous Christian way, and you're telling me that, you know, some drug addict bum is going to get the same welcome in heaven that I am. And, you know, that's judgment. It's judgment. And again, it's the matrix doing its job. The whole antagonist is here to separate us so that we cannot see our oneness. We are truly all one. You and I are created from the exact same stardust. We are made from the same soul essence. So the point of the game is to make us think that we're separate. We're in these separate bodies. We're doing our own separate lives and we're not connected. And so I think that people have a hard time with that concept because the game is really working on them.
That actually made the most sense where you said that, okay, if I'm going to the same place that Hitler is going to go to or the Mother Teresa is going to go to, that doesn't make sense. Then why should I be doing everything so perfectly? Why can't I take more risks? Maybe I could do whatever I want to do with. And that makes sense. That makes the most sense. Soul contracts. Can I change my soul contract?
There is a way to change a soul contract. You might have to come back in another incarnation to balance whatever you decided to not do. But our souls are also working up in the workshop all the time as well. I've had soul contracts with people that have broken them midway through life. And then if it's a soul lesson that absolutely demands to be learned in this lifetime, they can send in another soul to come in and have the lesson with you. So, you know, there's lots of different kinds of soul lessons. There's soul lessons of love. There's soul lessons of rejection. There's soul lessons of pain, soul lessons of acceptance. So there is a way to break a contract. Like, nothing is written in stone. The idea around pre-birth planning and picking our partners before we get here is to give us a guideline. But it really is a choose your own adventure sort of game. So you can pick a different twist and turn. You're going to end up having to, it's like going to university, going to college, like you pick a major and you have to take certain classes in order to achieve your major in school so that you can get your degree. So if you choose to skip the math class, but you needed math to get your degree, then you'll have to come back again and do something to get your math credit.
Why do you think, did you pick the near-death experience as well? Is this something that you picked in the soul contract?
A quick breather, take a moment to stretch, grab a drink, and we'll be right back.
So I picked the life experience of spiritual awakening. Now, I had a lot of different ways to come into spiritual awakening. It did not have to be the way that it was. So I saw a couple of different fractured timelines in my experience. So here's some of my major plot points: addiction, recovery, spiritual awakening. Now, I could have started my recovery process at 18. That was the first time that I ever went to rehab. It's the first time that I was ever exposed to recovery, but I decided to keep taking my own will back and to keep going down the path of addiction. So at my end timeline, the addiction, the recovery, and the spiritual awakening all toppled on top of each other. But there are other timelines that parallel versions of me are living where I had this slow and steady spiritual awakening. I went into 12-step fellowship. I worked the 12 steps. I had a spiritual awakening as a result of them. And it was just a slow and steady, easy, gradual awakening. But in this timeline that I'm in, I kept taking my will back and not listening to the internal GPS. And it was like, make a U-turn, make a U-turn. And I'm like, nah, I'm going to keep cruising down this road. And so then everything just piled on top of each other. And I had this really transformative experience, but it did not have to be this way. And I hear a lot of people say, I wish I had a near-death experience. Girl, no. Okay. It is crazy. Yeah. Your whole life completely changes in 1 second. You know, like for me, I feel like it was the only way that I was ever really going to get it. It was not an enjoyable experience to have my whole life crumble and then have to be rebuilt all in one moment.
Yeah. You know, when you said that, around 5 years. I don't know what I picked, okay? But around 5 years ago, I was sitting in my car and my life was just so great. And I was like, oh, I'm so bored. I wish something happened so I could, you know, like learn and become someone great. And then guess what? I got married and I got divorced. I became a single mother and all of that other stuff happened, you know? And now, and then I started looking into these podcasts like this, where I could just, like, when you're getting so messed up in life, you look for something else. So when I hear that this is all just a matrix and this is not real, I'm like, oh, is it? Boss, I don't care. You fire me. You know, it's more soothing to hear that. But now when I hear more and more, I can see that a lot more people are coming out talking about near-death experiences. So when you hear that, you feel like the only way I can also get the same awakening or the spiritual path and I can see the other side would be a near-death experience. If I didn't want to do this, if I didn't want to go through the trauma that you went through, and if I wanted to learn it in a joyful manner, what can I do? How can I do the same thing?
Wow, yes. You know, I think one of the greatest gifts of the people who come back from their near-death experiences is that they usually can conceptualize some sort of program for you to achieve your own sort of spiritual awakening. So I'm going to recommend a book. It's this beautiful book right here, a little bit of light reading. Just kidding. It's like a new Bible. So this is called A Course in Miracles, and you have to be very open-minded in order to be open to receiving the information inside this book. This is a channeled message from Jesus, and it's channeled through the mind of a militant atheist psychotherapist from New York in the 1970s. And when you open up the book, you can tell that it's not written from a human mind. These are not human words. And inside of this book is a workbook, and it's got one lesson for each day of the year. And it is a reprogramming. It dismantles all of my thought systems and brings me into a higher level of thought. So like the first 30 or so lessons are about, I don't know what anything is for. I don't know what this computer is for. I don't know what this chair is for. I don't know what this body is for. And so it's because everything in my mind automatically assigns meaning to things. And so this book is teaching me that if I can dismantle the meaning behind things, then I can live a much freer, more spiritual life. So it's a really complicated book. I always recommend a book before getting this book. That's what I did. I read A Course in Miracles Made Easy by Alan Cohen. I would definitely recommend that. There's so many other ways to achieve spiritual awakening. You don't have to die to achieve spiritual awakening. There's beautiful yoga practices. There's breathwork practices. There's also, I coach people through shadow work. So if you've experienced a lot of trauma in your life, actually processing through the wounds, the underlying wounds, and coming to different states of acceptance around your life. For me, a big part of my spiritual awakening was this knowing in the pre-birth planning. And if you don't have a knowing, you can adopt it as a belief. But for me, it broke me out of my victim mentality. And the matrix thrives on victim mentality and it thrives on fear. So for me to think that most of my life has already been orchestrated, I don't have to worry too much about what I do. I don't have to put all of this control and energy into outcome, because whatever is meant to happen is going to happen anyway. So for me, that has been a huge spiritual awakening for me. It's completely dismantled all of my fear.
Does reading the book, you know, when you read The Course in Miracles, which you said was Jesus speaking, like, does the Jesus in that book sound like the Jesus in the Bible?
Well, it depends on how you interpret the Bible, right? I think a big misconception of the Bible is that, I don't know why we still have the Old Testament in the Bible, because the New Testament trumps the Old Testament. Why do we still have that literature? I don't know. But you know, when you hear about Jesus in the New Testament, Jesus is a beautiful, loving teacher, and he sits with sinners and prostitutes, and he heals people that are disabled. He's a wonderful man. But the Old Testament confuses people, and we think that those two books go together, but they don't, because grace and salvation that Jesus offers has nothing to do with a fearful, condemning God that's talked about in the Old Testament. So there's another book called Jesus, My Autobiography, and it's channeled by a woman called Tina Louise Spaulding. And I would really recommend that book to anybody who wants to get a fresh perspective on Jesus, because number one, it's much more easy to understand than the Course. And it's just beautiful the way that he talks about, oh, this is how the Bible misinterpreted what I meant when I said this, or this is the lesson that I actually like to leave you with. And in Jesus, My Autobiography, the channel, you know, as Jesus is talking, he talks a lot about A Course in Miracles. He says, like, I gave you this information. It's all inside of A Course in Miracles. And, you know, I really enjoy listening to channelers. I believe in it. And it's all belief systems. You know, if you believe it to be true, then it will be true for you. So I do think that Christianity has kind of garbled up what Jesus meant. And that's okay, because that's all for a purpose too. You know, like, there's no need to be resentful about it. But if you feel like it doesn't quite fit, find something that does. You know, there's so much information out there. We live in an infinite sea of consciousness. If you don't like the structures of a particular religion, go develop your own spirituality. My spirituality has cherry-picked things from each organized religion. And I've been able to just sculpt this beautiful thing of my own spirituality around it.
Jesus, even in the Bible, I was watching the series called The Chosen, right?
Jesus is my boyfriend. I love Jonathan.
I know, you know, I was just telling my sister, yo, the Jesus in there, I'm having a crush on the Jesus.
Oh my goodness, yeah. me too.
Yeah, because that's like the beautiful series. And the part that I like the most is, you know, right now, when you're very religious, if I tell, you know, is Jesus even real? Then everyone just gets like, they think, oh my God, she's Satan now. You know, you're not supposed to question it. But in the series, every time someone asks a question to Jesus, his eyes light up and he's like, yes, I get to break that down. I get a challenge, or like, I get to talk about it. And it's so beautiful because he encourages you to ask questions. And that's the beautiful part. When you said that channelers are going to talk about anything, and you pick what resonates with you, and you can leave the rest. You can cherry pick what you want from each religion. That's so beautiful. And even the apostles of Jesus, it's a tax collector and a sinner, and the people who are condemned in society, who nobody would hang out with. Those were the kind of people that Jesus hung out with, and they were the ones, you know, spreading the message. So the religion is amazing. And I think they always try to put in a little bit of fear here and there, but it's always good to ask questions. There was a point where you mentioned, I think I've watched it in one of the videos, where you said that you wanted to heal after you came back too. You wanted to heal, but you were still addicted to the drugs and you were not able to get out of it. Can you tell me how you dealt with the withdrawal symptoms? And, you know, I don't know so much about it, but.
So I experienced a spontaneous healing after my spiritual experience. So probably about 2 months after my spiritual experience, like I said, I didn't believe that I had a spiritual experience. I didn't even know what the word spiritual experience meant. So I just kept living my life the way that I was. And my life was about using drugs, prostituting myself, getting money, manipulating people, stealing, lying, cheating, all of those things. And then all of these synchronicities, these divine signs were happening to make my path very, very narrow. The path that I needed to get on was the path of recovery. Like I said, all of my plot points were stacking up on top of each other and I was ignoring them. So all of my drug dealers on the exact same day decided to stop selling. It was totally bizarre. I'd call up a guy. I'd be like, hey, man, I need to pick up. What's good? He'd be like, no, I don't do that anymore. Don't call me again. I'm like, okay, that's bizarre. Bye. Call up the next guy. Same story. But these dudes did not know each other. It was crazy. I mean, like, how could it be that all of my resources to get substances were all of a sudden not available? So then I got really sick because I had a physical addiction to opiates and I was strung out on. So I was completely sick. I was, you know, just, I was writhing in pain. And I was in my bed and I had this moment where I thought, okay, I know exactly what my parents were going through because I'm going to have to die to make this pain stop. This pain is incredible. It is so overwhelming. I cannot deal with this. And I had this moment of mental and spiritual suicide in that moment of having that thought. And then I heard this voice come in and it said that I could request what I wanted fixed. And I was in the throes of desperation. So I was like, okay, strange voice, please heal me out of my heroin withdrawal. I didn't say that I wanted to be rid of my addiction because I still definitely wanted to use other drugs. I just didn't want to be physically dependent on this one substance. And then they told me to lay back and to count backwards from 10. And as I did, I saw these two little men appear in my mind's eye. And I see them every time I tell the story. They're like, hey, we're still here. So these two little men, they had these lawnmowers and they started mapping out every crevice of my mind. And as they walked through the crevices of my mind, I felt these intense hot tingles start to take over my head. And now in hindsight, I feel like they were plowing out new neural pathways for myself because I was going through a physical withdrawal, and it felt like I was in pain, but I wasn't actually in pain. Nobody hit me. I'm not cut. I'm not wounded, but my brain thinks that I am in pain because the receptors are all off. So I feel like these little men were plowing out my receptors and giving me new calibrated ones. And when they finished mapping out my mind, it felt like somebody drew X's across my forehead. And I sort of thought maybe that was representative of the crown of thorns. And then there was this plunger on my head and this big white flash. I was instantaneously healed out of day 3 of heroin withdrawal. I mean, moments before I was sick all over myself, welcoming death. It felt like my bones were made of fire, like my skin was made of broken glass. It was so incredibly painful. And then I was completely well and healed and fine. And I threw myself on the ground and I was crying out to the divine. And I was saying, how could this be happening to me? I don't believe in this. I don't believe in you. This, you could not have picked a more unworthy subject to bestow this kind of grace on. And for the contrast, I was every kind of terrible. I was an atheist, what society would consider terrible. I was an atheist. I was an orphan to suicide. I was a prostitute. I was a drug addict. I was a person who abandoned every good thing in life. I was a liar, a manipulator, a thief. I had raped people. I was a racist. I was just every kind of terrible that you could ever imagine. That's who I was. And somehow I was being bestowed with the healing grace of the universe. And it was so, I felt so unworthy. You know, this flood of unworthiness tried to wash over me and it was quickly combated away. And I really felt like I was being hugged by the divine, like it was okay. And, you know, my life really transformed after that because I thought, well, if I'm worthy of something like this, then everybody is, you know, because I am definitely like what the world would consider unworthy. But if I'm loved unconditionally, then everybody is. And so then I had to start to change my perceptions till I wanted to live more God-centered life. Like that. I want to see everybody as somebody that I can love. And it doesn't happen every day. You know, like I have plenty of people that I don't like. But, you know, today at least I have the awareness that everybody is loved the way that I am.
You know, you mentioned that when you heal yourself, you're healing all the children. I didn't understand that concept. How does that work?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a large concept to think of. But because of the law of oneness, because I know that we are all actually connected, I know that my healing will have some sort of ripple effect on somebody else. Now, I might never see it tangibly in my life. I might never see what kind of effect it has, but I have this deep spiritual knowing that it does. So the same way that you can smile at a stranger on the street, and maybe you just deterred them from committing suicide. Maybe they were having such a terrible day, but your smile completely changed their whole outlook on life. And they said, okay, there is good in the world. This beautiful woman just smiled at me. Or, you know, we don't know the impact that we have on other people. So I take my healing process very seriously. I am very vigilant in healing because not only do I want to heal myself, you know, I do. I don't want to have the same patterns of behavior that I had before, but I know that everybody else also deserves healing. So the more that I heal myself, healed people heal people.
Yeah. That makes sense because it's the concept of quantum entanglement, right?
Yes.
It's like if you hadn't healed yourself yet, you would have been even more angry with the world. You would have probably inflicted more pain on the world. So,
yeah. And also to go off of that thought, you know, I will attract into my life versions of myself. So the more that I heal myself, the more healed versions of people I attract into my life. When I'm broken, I attract the broken pieces of myself because they're mirroring back to me what I still need to heal. So the more vigilant I am in healing, the more vigilant I, the more I can expose myself to the people that I would prefer to be around.
So then, now you will not see anyone from the past timeline, you're saying? Anyone so, that you...
A quick breather, take a moment to stretch, grab a drink, and we'll be right back.
I see reflections of patterns of behavior that I have. So I work in the recovery field. So I'm around people in active addiction all day long. So the reflection that I see in them is that I see a past version of myself that I'm able to offer compassion to. So instead of being like, you guys need to change your life, which I would have never listened to somebody when I was in active addiction telling me to change my life, I just hold space for them. I say, I know that if I can heal, they can definitely heal. And I don't need to be super active in it. I can just hold that vision for them. So it's not that my whole life is surrounded by great people. I mean, I got a lot of great people in my life. I really do. I'm so lucky to have found the members of my soul family on earth. And that's part of the healing process too. The more that I heal, the more that I can call in the people that are meant for me in my life. But I do see people in my life that mirror old versions of myself or maybe some unhealed versions of myself back to me.
You know, I recently saw a post of addict mom who was trying to sell her baby for $500, and she was then jailed. Nobody bought the baby and all of that. The old me, the one who had not watched your video, would have just crawled past it and just thought, I would have dehumanized the woman. I would have just thought, okay, there must be something wrong, you know, whatever. Like, I wouldn't have thought that she also has a soul in her, that she would have also had those problems that she had to face, which led her to the situation that she is in. So it's because of your story, and it's not just me. Like, there's so many people that you are impacting by you sharing your story. It's just such a big thing that you're doing. And, you know, thank you so much for doing that. There was a point where you spoke about you gearing up for the mission on Earth and the Great Awakening. Can you talk about it?
Yes. So we are in the midst of the Great Awakening. That was the download, very loud and clear, that we are in the midst of transformation and that every soul that's here right now has signed up to be here for that transformation. So the Great Awakening is about a transformation of thought, transformation of consciousness. Right now, we're in a very self-centered, ego-centered thought system. And what we're talking about right now, recognizing the oneness in other people, that's going into a more service-centered, God-centered thought system. So I believe that we live inside of a dream. I believe that this is an illusion that we live inside of, and that we'll have this collective kick, to use Inception as a reference. We will have a collective kick where we all wake up to a different layer of the dream. And maybe it will be the real reality, or maybe it'll be another layer of the dream. Who knows? So I think that that's what the Great Awakening is all about, is about waking up to the illusion and living a more optimal life. Once you can start to attract, once you understand the laws, the universal laws, like the law of oneness, the law of attraction, the law of assumption, the law of karma, you can really start to live an amazing, free human experience. So many people experience depression and sadness and poverty, and they have these very lower level of consciousness life experiences. That's New York City showing
That's
up.
Okay. It's so fun.
There's so much going on out there, you know, and I'm connected to all of it. You know, it's beautiful. So yeah, you know, for me, I think that the Great Awakening is really about coming into spiritual awareness and coming into that service-centered mindset. How can I be of service to the collective? How can I be of service to God?
Can you describe that scene where you were in a spaceship or whatever?
So one of the first parts of my spiritual experience was that I found myself, it looked and felt a lot like a spaceship. And there was thousands of other souls all around me. And in the center of this ship was a commander, and it was this bright, effervescent light. And you can call the commander Christ or Krishna or Buddha, Source, because it's all the same thing. But this commander was gearing us up for this trip to Earth, and they were downloading us with the awareness of the Great Awakening. And so we all had our missions, we all had our life plan, and we were getting ready to take this jump. And for me, that awareness to know that there is something bigger. Again, everything is just a collection of stories. And, you know, these are the stories that my soul wanted me to have because it was going to help me with my mission here. So for me, this story is so cool to think that we're here for liberation. We're here for evolution of thought. And it's always darkest before the dawn. And I know that there's a lot of things that go on in the world that seem tragic, and there's suffering, and there's starvation and poverty. And, you know, I know that those things exist. I don't have to focus on them because I already know that they exist. So instead, I just stay very steadfast in my mission that I'm here to uplift the consciousness of the planet. I can't uplift anything if I stay stuck in fear. So I focus my energy on spiritual communities, on spiritual teachings, on healing, on connecting with other human beings like we're doing right now.
When there were the wars that was going on, right, between Palestine, Israel, and then all the wars that was coming up, one of the things that I struggled with was feeling helpless, not being able to help them out. So the least that I can do is probably share the post and share the stories. But then that felt wrong because of what you were saying, right? You can't propagate that vibration. In such situations, is there anything that we can do to help the world? Is what can I do right now? Because I see so much happening.
Pray. You can pray. Pray for the people. Pray for their souls. Because I truly believe that their souls signed up to be part of that experience. Again, this, like, it almost sounds dismissive, right? Like, why would a child sign up for something like that? My human doesn't know. My human cannot comprehend why terrible injustice or murder happens. My human can't, but my soul does know. And so I can pray and come into contact with my soul and say, please help me find peace around the feelings of anger, frustration, and confusion that I have right now. And I always come back to the fact that this is not real, this world. Like, this is a costume that I'm wearing. So the same way that in a movie, when a character dies in a movie, what happens when the scene is over? They yell cut, and the actor gets up and walks away and takes off their costume and goes home. And it's the same thing here, you know, not to sound dismissive or unempathetic. I absolutely am. You know, like the parents who lose children, they are our greatest spiritual soldiers. I don't know how they function in life after signing up for a lesson like that to come here to Earth and have their creation destroyed. And I have the utmost respect for any parent who loses a child. I think that it's the most brave thing that a soul can do. And I do have empathy for what goes on in the world, for the confusion, the frustration, and the heartache that exists. But I can't focus my energy there. I just can't, you know. And if it's part of my life experience to do that, it's going to come find me. And some people feel very passionate about that. And maybe they are supposed to be involved in some way. But spirit doesn't have a sense of anger. Spirit sees compassion in everything. You know, like praying for the villains in this story and praying for everybody else that's been exposed. There really is power in prayer. And again, everything is just a collection of thoughts. So, you know, I pray for peace for the people that have lost loved ones.
Yeah. In fact, I can say that watching them is what awakened, or rather made so many people around me to want to get on this. I wouldn't have started this podcast if it wasn't for them, because I saw my own brothers, my own children, my own sisters there. And it made me so angry and so helpless. And I wanted everyone to, you know, get on the spiritual path. Let's just do it together. What if everybody can focus on the new earth? Everyone can focus on the awakening. And what if we can completely stop these altogether? You know, just focusing on that.
I think the things that are happening in our collective right now are the alarm clocks. So we don't have to focus so much on why is it buzzing like that? That is a marker for you to wake up to your true spiritual nature. You're not meant to be here and suffer. That's not what we're here for. So, you know, I hear people say all the time, like, suffering is part of the human condition. Well, it doesn't have to be. You know, like, you can make a conscious decision not to choose not to suffer.
Yeah, no, that is true. Because, you know, when things are going fine, you feel like something is wrong. Like, why is everything fine? There must be something at the corner that's going to come up and then scare me. Like, we keep thinking that this is abnormal.
to not have any sufferings. Do you have any last and final, do you have any final words of advice for the people of the Middle East?
I've really enjoyed this conversation so much. And, you know, I think that we talked about some pretty impactful things. Again, the whole world is a system of beliefs. It's a system of thoughts. You get to choose your belief system. You do not have to conform to somebody else's idea of religion or spirituality or life in general. You get to decide the way that you see and interpret things. And that is spiritual autonomy, taking your power back. So I'm really grateful for this space. One of the things that I always say when I leave is that your thoughts really do shape your reality. If you can change your thoughts, you can change your life.
That was beautiful, Betty. Thank you so much. And lastly, where can we find you?
Yeah, I'm on all social media. My handle on everything is Buddha Betty. It's a play on words. I would love to connect, especially if you're looking for spiritual community. I've found so many amazing ones, and I'd love to just shepherd you over to some great communities.
And if someone, you also offer your coaching services, right? Can you just talk about that as well?
Yes, absolutely. If anybody's interested in doing shadow work or learning more about the law of attraction to manifest your most optimal timeline, that's what I do with people. I've been able to utilize those tools in my own life. And so I'm more than willing to share the information that I have with others. I also offer a sliding scale. So if you don't have money for services, but you need them, feel free to reach out and we'll come to some sort of arrangement.
Thank you so much, Betty. Thank you so much for the work that you do for the humanity. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
So grateful for you.
I want to thank Betty for coming on the show today. If you want links to anything that was mentioned today, head over to the show notes at www.celestevolve.com/2. And if you've only been listening to this over podcast and you want to watch this amazing conversation, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at www.celestevolve.com/YouTube.